Let's punch this podcast in the dick!
Yeah!
Yeah, whoop whoop! It's the Bitter End Podcast back for season 6, and we are apparently for some reason super broing down!
I couldn't tell you why, but that's what we're doing. Well, yeah, we'll probably mellow out a little bit as we go on. Season 6, we're back with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan.
What are we here to talk about, Todd?
Police Academy!
That is correct. The natural progression from watching all of Nightmare on Elm Street, it is Police Academy.
Well, I'm super excited, man, because I haven't seen a Police Academy movie in years. And I know that I've seen some, and I have no idea which ones I've really seen. And I don't think it's that crazy a leap from Nightmare on Elm Street, because if you think about it, horror and comedy, they've got a lot in common, right? Mm-hmm. They're movies that are there to do more than just tell a story. They're there to get a physical reaction out of you, right?
Yeah.
A horror has got to tell a story, but if it doesn't make you scared, then it's not going to fly. Same with a comedy. It's got to make you, it's got to have a story, but it's got to make you laugh. Right?
Yeah, and there's a bunch of these, so they must have made someone laugh. Maybe they'll make us laugh.
I hope so.
Yeah, so just to, if you're a new listener to the poddy, so me and Todd, we like to embark on a little adventure every season, an adventure into the franchise, the movie franchise, where we pick a film and we watch everyone in that series to the bitter end. Just films mind, there is a Police Academy TV series and a cartoon series. We are not watching all of those, but we will be watching all of the films.
How many films, Tom?
We got 7, right?
Whoa! Magnificent Seven.
I'm going to lay some titles on you. So we're going to start today with Police Academy, the first one from 1984. Then there's Police Academy 2, Their First Assignment. Police Academy 3, Back in Training. Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, Party Time! Sorry, Party Time isn't part of the title. Police Academy 6, City Under Siege. That's where it gets dark and gritty, yeah? And then Police Academy, Mission to Moscow.
Does that one not have a 7 in the title?
No. Whoa. I think they're getting modern there, because that one came out in the 90s.
Wowzers.
Whoa. Yeah.
Well,
some
this is going to be
ensemble Gutenberg comedy.
It's going to be such an exciting ride. So we hope that you will join us. For new listeners, you can watch the movies and then listen to what we have to say if you want, but you totally don't have to. Our raison d'etre is that we're watching these, so you don't have to.
Yeah, so you can totally bluff it if anyone just starts wants to talk real deep with you about the entire Police Academy franchise. We got you covered, man.
If you ever run into Steve Guttenberg at like a party and it's super awkward.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, you can be like, hey, bro, that one bit in Assignment Miami Beach, that was great. I don't know. So we watched the trailer.
Yes.
Just get a taste, a flavour. I was getting some, like, the first few little bits in the trailer, I was getting some serious Naked Gun vibes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, his fingerprints are all over it, right? And the guy, I forget the name of the actor, but the guy that's playing Lassard, like the sort of big chief policeman, he's got a real
Leslie Nielsen vibe going on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. I think I've always thought of that. I was kind of like, who the fuck, who is this kind of like cheap-ass Leslie Nielsen we got going on here?
But then there's, you know, it's for me as someone that's seen it before but not for a long time, I was just happy to, like, be reminded of a lot of these characters. We get Hightower, there's the sound effects guy, there's the guy that likes guns.
Yeah.
There's, like, the sort of the really violent lady one.
Yeah.
There's Gutenberg.
Gutenberg. They're all there.
I'll tell you who I was missing from the trailer, but who I definitely know shows up. Maybe she's not in this first movie. There's like a really meek, short lady who's got like a high squeaky voice.
Oh, no, I think she's in there.
Okay, I think she's my favourite.
So, like, just kind of like a hint of the kind of comedy that we're in for. There were like a bunch of gags in there that seemed to be like, whoa, a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a few of them.
Because that's funny, right? And then one where it looks like someone's head goes up a horse's bum. Yeah. A guy accidentally hits his wife in the crotch with a suitcase.
Yep, and she goes down like a pro.
It's all there. Physical comedy, but also Oh, I think he's going to make us think this one.
In these turbulent times, what we need is a movie where every man, like you and me, yeah, are the stars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, will it provide?
I think it's going to be super interesting because comedy is not traditionally something that always ages super duper well.
Yeah, that is super true. That it's weird that, and so I'm very interested to see how these have dated or what might not have dated.
And you better believe that we will be recognizing the funny bits, but mm-hmm. we will also be calling your attention to the bits that do not work so well. We are not going to pull no punches.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you better watch out, Police Academy, because we're coming for you. But before we do, it is time to play our favorite game that we play here, the IMDb guessing game. Todd Jordan, welcome to the show.
I love this game. How does it work?
So, you've just watched the trailer for this film, Todd. Now I would like you to make a guess about what you feel that this film would have been rated on IMDb.
IMDb.com, you say?
Yes, so a score out of 10 decimal points are allowed, sir. How do you feel that this has been judged?
It's tricky because traditionally, the first one is usually the one that scores the best.
Mm.
I think we've had... I don't know if we've ever had a season where a sequel scores higher than the original.
No, we've had it get close.
Close, but no banana.
Mm.
So I'm going to aim high because I feel like I need to for my own optimism.
Yeah, okay,
we've got seven
yeah.
of these to get through.
I can see that.
6.8.
Mate. So close.
What was it?
6.7.
Oh, you fuckstain.
Hey, don't talk like that to me.
I'm mad enough to kill and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Hey, I don't even have an account on IMDb. I've never rated a movie in my life. That is quite strong.
Either the insult was strong, but also the score is strong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go fuck yourself, buddy. But also, Police Academy, a lot of people seem to be holding this in, you know, some pretty decent regard. So I'm interested. I am interested. Put that on my gravestone.
Tom Denny, he was interested.
Yep, because after this, I may be dead.
Let's go dive in.
Season 6. We fought the law, and the law won. Not bad.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
Surprisingly watchable.
Would watch again.
Yeah, well
6.7 out of 10. Would definitely watch again.
Yeah. Well, that's it, folks.
See ya. No, it was a strong start to a franchise. I read a little bit of trivia just before we watched it, stating that when the creator of Police Academy first planned this opus, he did not plan a 90-minute comedy romp. He planned a 10-movie series. Now, he only gets to 7. We know that he only gets to 7. But you can tell yeah. straight away that the seeds are being sown for something so much grander.
Oh, yeah. There's so many loose threads for them to tug on in further films. There's so many, so many cliffhangers. So much, I really wonder how they're going to develop this character even more. I mean, no. I don't really see his vision yet from this first film. Maybe it will unfold as we go on.
Yes, yeah, somewhere along the lines of Assignment Miami Beach, I think.
Yeah. Do you think that Mission to Moscow is going to be it's just going to finish on a massive cliffhanger, and it's going to be one of those films, when you get those films that finish on a massive and it's and they never made another one. It's going to be fuck, Mahoney dies, and it's is he going to come back? Or something like that. Is he dead?
Wait,
is Mahoney dead or not dead?
Well, that's the thing. So do you think that Mahoney is somehow, immortal?
Well, no, okay, not immortal. That you think that maybe he might have died.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay.
He jumps in front of a bullet trying to save, Gorbachev or something like that. And then it's Mahoney, don't you die on me.
Freeze frame.
Black screen.
Police Academy will return in part 8.
Yeah.
Mission to Minsk. And then they never made it. They never made it to Minsk. Damn.
Well, we're going to have to worry about Minsk later. We've got to deal with this one.
Yeah. 1984's Police Academy, the one.
All right, guys, I'm going to lay this shit on the line for you. It's got a pretty basic setup. It's just a sort of city, like nondescript city backdrop. It's officially on the books, not meant to be any specific city. We're watching it. We're trying to figure it out. We're like, is it New York?
Thought it could have been LA at other points.
Yeah, but it's a bit too, the architecture doesn't look like LA. Like, maybe it's Washington, D.C., but like, no, it's, it doesn't look like Detroit. We worked it out. They filmed it in Toronto.
Yeah, but it's not meant to be anywhere
specific. So Toronto is officially Anywheresville, USA, apparently. I'm sure the people of Toronto are very nice about that.
I'm sure they are. I think they probably get quite a lot of money for the city for that, because I think like it doubles for a lot of cities in other films.
Yeah, well, you'd like to think that they probably use it in at least five of the Police Academy movies. I mean, maybe not Assignment Miami Beach and maybe not Mission to Moscow.
You never know. You know, I really hope they use it in Assignment Miami Beach. That would be interesting.
And there's an opening bit of text on the screen which basically says, oh no, there's not enough police or something, and now the city has a lady mayor.
Madness.
And she...
She's got some crazy ideas.
So her crazy idea is to open up the idea of letting in police academy recruits that aren't just like massively stacked white dudes.
Yeah, it's kind of like the lady mayor has decided that anyone can apply to be a policeman regardless of, you know, like body type, gender, race. And you're kind of like, how were the rules before?
Yeah,
like... proper like Hitler youth rules like before, I guess. Yeah, so we're instantly kind of like, okay, so that's a nice, neat, easy setup. Questionable, definitely questionable what like the world was of police academy before this radical female mayor came in and like, okay.
She's a socialist, Tom.
Yeah.
These aren't the good values that any city USA was founded on. Yeah, and so it also then goes on to say that obviously once these new laxer acceptance laws were announced, obviously everyone's clamoring to become a police officer. It's the most in-demand job in any city USA.
Yeah, the most coveted job in the entire world. Because the only reason that like I haven't become a police officer is because of those damn rules, those damn police bean counters.
Yeah, they don't allow podcasters, I'm afraid.
Yeah, they don't like scrawny podcasters.
Yeah, and so then we get a montage of a bunch of characters and how...
Yeah, like, so who is going to answer the call of the police academy? Well, they're going to show us.
So, no shit, there's a fucking bunch of characters in this movie, guys. And I get a feeling that we're going to be with these characters for a bit of the long haul throughout the franchise. So we're going to really try and go into extra detail with them, you know, help you understand who they are, who we're talking about. So we're not, because the plot,
it isn't really a lot of plot.
That's the plot.
Do you want to know what this film is? It's basically like a college frat movie, but like they're policemen. That's the gag.
That's it.
Also kind of slash like an army training thing, because I don't know what police training is like, but it seems a lot more like army training than police training.
Tom, you got to jump over one wall and you got to do a shit ton of press-ups.
Sounds like the army to me. Anyway, so...
the first guy we meet is Tackleberry.
Like Tackleberry.
Yeah. So, Tom, what is Tackleberry's deal?
Tackleberry is... he is a crazy white man who loves guns. It's the American dream, baby!
What was stopping him from applying before?
Yeah, that's the thing I don't understand. Like, because there are some people where you're just kind of like, well, what was their problem? Like, I'm guessing that... is it in his case that he was too insane for the police before? And now, like, this radical new mayor is like, no, we cannot discriminate against people who are just intrinsically dangerous to have in a position of authority. We need to break down these social barriers, and we need this fucking maniac who has got guns strapped to every bit of his body. We need him to revolutionize the American police force. We need to get away from brutality. We need Tackleberry.
Well, Tom, until you stop discriminating against the murderer, no man is free.
Exactly. Who's going to stand up for the psychotic murderer? Radical female mayor. That's who. And so Tackleberry is introduced. He's like a security guard
in some big downtown building.
And so the opening scene of the film, it's all like thunder and lightning and rain outside. So it doesn't feel like a comedy. And like, it seems like Tackleberry's boss just like kind of like comes out of an office late at night, and Tackleberry, like, he's terrified of Tackleberry because he's just kind of like, hey, so you're off to join the police. That's pretty cool, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to wake up one morning and find you with a knife in my stomach. He fucks off. Tackleberry, he hears something. He's on the prowl. He's got loads of guns on him because obviously he's like a security guard.
Tackleberry gonna do what Tackleberry gonna do.
He hears something behind a door. He kicks in the door, fires loads of shots wildly into the dark, turns on the lights. It was his surprise going away party. And there's like cake everywhere.
They just sit there like this is not the first time that he's fired guns at them.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I did not expect so early on into the film that I'd have a genuine chuckle.
Right. This is a good point about the chuckles. We challenged ourselves with kind of trying to note down our chuckle level throughout the movie. So we're gonna try to note, you know, the certain high points. I would call this particular chuckle the cake chuckle.
It was a mid-chuckle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Four out of ten.
It was a 4 out of 10. It was an audible chuckle from me. Mm. At the opening of the film, I was like, yeah, okay, cool, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then who do we get next?
Then we get the Goots himself. Goots and his glutes. We get Steve.
Gutenberg, yeah.
Steve Gutenberg, who is kind of a poor man's Tom Hanks.
You know what I think he is? So his character, Mahoney, is kind of one of those like cocky douchebag characters, very much in the mold of Ferris Bueller.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and I don't like Ferris Bueller, and I don't really like Mahoney. Like, I prefer like a bit. He's too self-assured to be an underdog. I feel like he's just kind of like, he very knowingly is a massive knob.
He's. I remember when I was a young, tiny, baby, infant, orphan boy watching this movie and just thinking that Steve Gutenberg's character of Mahoney was just the coolest guy.
Yeah, I can see how, like, how you, as like an orphan baby boy, like, you know, watching Police Academy through the window of like a TV shop, like in the movies, just pressed up against the glass for warmth, would be like, this guy, Gutenberg, yeah, he is my guy. I don't feel that character has aged very well with me. You know, like,
No, because I just find him quite intolerable.
Yeah, very much like how I feel about Ferris Bueller. Because I never watched Ferris Bueller until I was about, like, 24. And after people were like, oh, Ferris Bueller, that's a great film. It's like, he's a knob. He's a massive... Also, I don't like Matthew Broderick. I've got a lot more time for Gutenberg.
I watched War Games last night. That's got Matthew Broderick in it. Has not aged well.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, so that is Mahoney, and he's kind of like a hothead.
Yeah, but he's like a sassy hothead who, like, he's just trying to coast by in life.
Maybe you would have really liked it. Maybe it's this thing, like, maybe he's like an 80s guy. Like, in the 80s, you'd be like, hey, yeah, that's the kind of guy. That's the guy I like.
Yeah, he's like a... Oh, I don't know. He's like a snarky version of Fry from Futurama. He just wants to do the minimum effort.
Yeah, get along,
but only he's mean about people.
Yeah, so take all the nice things about Fry from Futurama and replace them with meanness.
So when we first meet Mahoney, a.k.a. Gutenberg, he's working in a car park and a guy turns up and he's like, hey, park my car. And Gutenberg is like, oh, well, the car park's full, mate. And then the guy's like, no, you back my car. You gotta park my car. And that's it, right? That's all it takes for Gutenberg to go completely nuclear on him. And so he starts by just really performing a full-on ad hominem attack on the guy and pointing out that he's wearing a wig, but not just going, you're wearing a wig, mate. He starts shouting to strangers, going, this guy's wearing a wig. Hey, check it out. We got a wig over here. Come on, everybody. Come look at the wig. Nobody gives a shit. And then, obviously, Gutenberg's boss comes over and is, turns out he's mates with Mr. Wig. That is his name in the credits, Mr. Wig.
Is it?
Yeah. and they're mates, so he's like, all right, you're going to have to park the car. And he's like, okay, there's no space, though. I'm going to have to park the car. And he's like, you got to go park it. And he's like, okay, but there's no space, though. And you're going to go to park it. And he goes, okay, but I can take it to space, though. And so then he drives it. He does a kind of a weird side wheelie where I don't know how he does it, but the car goes up on two wheels on the side.
Mm.
And then he rams it into the space between two cars and is like, okay, baby, I'll park your car.
You've been Gutenberging, son.
Sassy.
And then he gets in trouble. And the long and short of it is that, like, he gets pulled down the station. Apparently he's a troublemaker. He keeps on doing this. And he's like, son, this guy, this cop with an amazing handlebar kind
Detective
of moustache.
Detective Reed. With yeah. Beautiful handlebar
moustache. Beautiful
moustache.
Scene stealer. Just like, is kind of like, well, you got to go to the police academy or you're going to go to lockup. So that's the situation. Like, you can't quit. Otherwise, you're going to jail. So there we get our stakes for Gutenberger.
Meanwhile, while he's in the waiting room to go and see Reed's handlebar moustache and be given this like bit of exposition that you've got to join the academy and you can't quit. Next to him in the waiting room is a character named Jones.
By Michael Winslow.
Michael Winslow, you might know him as the sound effects guy.
And hey, everybody likes Michael Winslow and his sound effects, right?
Turns out they're a bit more tedious than you remember them. I remember thinking that these were hysterical. I remember thinking they were adorable. But
they're still quite good.
They're good quality sound effects, but they're not good quality jokes.
They are not jokes.
No.
Going... That's not a joke. That's just some noises, bro.
yeah, exactly. So Gutenberg is next to Winslow, and he's like, what are you here in jail for? And Winslow goes, oh, I'll show you. And then he gets out like a little microphone, and he makes like a
machine gun noise.
And everybody is terrified for their lives, thinks they're going to die, leaps onto the tables, and is like, my children, no, everything I've worked for. Oh my God, not again. I'm reliving all of this horrible trauma. And Gutenberg goes, good one, mate.
Yeah.
Friends forever.
Yeah, he's like, this one gag is going to, for some reason, create this unbreakable bond between us that cannot be explained throughout the rest of the film. Because he gets taken off to the police academy, and he's like, well, I've got to take my mate Michael Winslow.
And I've literally just met.
Yeah.
There's no scene of him going and saying to Michael Winslow,
do you want to do this?
Do you want to come? He's just there.
And we don't know whether or not like Michael Winslow is in the same situation as him, where he's kind of like, it's this or lock up. You know what I mean? Like, he's just been making sound effects. I mean, really, how bad trouble can you get in for making sound effects? So, like, you had to kind of think, like, well, is the Glutenberger, does he hate Michael Winslow? Is he like, great machine gun sound effect guy? That's not fucking funny. I'm taking you to police academy, you dick. Or is he kind of like, this guy, I love him. I can tell that he just gets me. You know,
Funniest thing I've seen in my life.
You know what I like? Gun sounds. They are fucking hilarious. Like, it raises more questions than get answered, I have to say. Like, even, like, later on in the film, when they're, like, getting, like, assigned their, like, roommates in the academy, he's like, no, I've got to be with Michael Winslow. Like, he might do, like, a sound like R2-D2 any minute, and if I'm not there to piss myself laughing when he does it, I will be livid. Like, what?
Yep. It's a mystery wrapped in a riddle, one that I can only hope will be explained a little bit more as the franchise goes on, Tom.
I mean, maybe this would be the 10-part... like opus is this unraveling of Winslow Gutenberger, you know, like their bond.
Yeah.
I mean, one that will never come to fruition.
Sadly, until, well, you know, get that reboot going, guys. Part 8.
There's nothing to say they can't do it. They're both still alive, right? I assume.
So then we meet Commandant Lassard. Now he's this kind of Leslie Nielsen light type guy. He's not as he's not as dumb or as wacky as Leslie Nielsen, but he's a nice guy. He's just in charge, and he's got beautiful silver hair, and he is in the office of the police academy, and he is being lectured by his boss, who's complaining about Lady Mayor's new rules. And this guy, he's not so nice, and he's going, oh, I remember the day back in the day before the Lady Mayor, back when every cadet was the right weight, the right height, the right colour, and they all had Johnsons as far as the eye can see.
And that is that's a squirmy moment here in 2017, isn't it?
I think that back in 84, that might have been an easier joke to laugh at. Like, it hits a little bit close to the bone.
Yeah, that's when I started making my tally of racist gags for the film.
Tom, how many racist gags do you count for the entire movie?
By my count, 4. Beaten by 6 gay gags.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't really count, like, misogynistic gags, because I just assumed that was going to be, like, pretty much the whole film.
Okay. I am going to give the movie the benefit of the doubt and say that that tally will slightly drop with each movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be right, yeah.
I mean, let's hope.
Put a pin in that.
We'll just put a pin in that. It was just a moment, we felt awkward, and we moved on like the film did. Who else was in that room?
Well, there's also Harris, who is the kind of the real baddie of the piece. He is Commandant Lassard's sort of next in command, and he's just a nasty piece of work. He's a real meanie. And
he's got a good cane action going on.
Yeah, like a cane, like the penguin from Batman. And he reveals that there is the closest that will come to a plot twist. So Steve Guttin Bergerac was promised that he could not quit, but he could be fired. Well, apparently, political machinations with the new Lady Mayor mean that they are not allowed to fire any of the new recruits.
Right, so
They've got a Mexican standoff.
Exactly, yeah. So they're just like, we're going to make life hell for these recruits.
So that they'll quit, but they don't realise that the Glutenberg is the only one who won't be able to quit.
He can't, yeah. Even though he's the one that doesn't want to be there. Because everybody else is just like the glamorous life of a police officer. I 100% want to do that. There's a fuckload of other people. I've got to say, it's a bit of an overly stuffed film with characters, and I feel that like some of these characters we will get to see a lot more of in other films, and some of them will drop off. Although I feel like I kind of know all of them from being like a little bit aware of Police Academy, seeing bits of the films and like the cartoon. So you've got we've got Hightower.
I love Hightower.
Giant dude who doesn't say very much, very quiet, but like a giant, super strong, used to be a florist. That's a gag. We've got this...
Didn't really know what box to tick for that.
No, we've got this kind of European Lothario guy.
His name is Georges Martin.
Yeah, you kind of spend a lot of time being like, is he French or Spanish or Italian? You can't really tell from like the accent the guy is doing. But because he is European, he absolutely loves to bone down and the ladies love him for it. And this is like a bit where he's like talking to Gutenberg and like what is playing in the background. Just like samba music, because it's kind of like, hey, this guy's from the continent, you know, like that's what they all listen to over there.
But then it's revealed that he's not from the continent at all. His name is not Georges Martin, it's George Martin. And it's all an act to get the ladies.
Which he does with aplomb.
Aplomb. It's his raison d'etre.
Yes, indeed. Who else have we got? We've got Kim Cattrall.
Kim Cattrall. She plays a character called Thompson. I didn't catch her first name. And she seems to come from a rich family. We see her being brought to the academy in like a limo, and her mum is like, oh, must you join the police academy, darling? Why are you doing it? And she's like, oh, I'm doing it to meet interesting people.
This was one of the points which really made me chuckle. So this is other like cadet, who is this?
Spackler,
who is just like a clumsy nerd, basically. He was the guy in the trailer that like,
smacked his wife in the vagina with a suitcase. The wife is like, you can't go and join the police academy. I won't let you. And she jumps on the bonnet of his car and he just drives off with her on the bonnet of his car. And you go, okay, well, that wasn't very funny, whatever. And then you've got this bit of Kim Cattrall and Kim Cattrall's mum just being like, oh, darling, why are you doing this? Well, I just thought I'd meet interesting people. And then you just see sliding into the background is Spackler with his wife still on the hood of the car, just going, got a little chuckle out of me. And then later on, about 5 minutes later in the film, when everyone's showing up for like a very like dropping the kids off at college kind of scene where everyone's kind of like hanging out and it feels super not like a police film, but like a college program. He just pulls up still with the wife on the bonnet of the car and she just goes flying into a bush.
This guy does not give a fuck about the woman he loves.
He absolutely does not. Marriage of convenience is what I say to you, but also gave me a little chuckle. And I'm not ashamed to admit that.
Do you know why that is, Tom? It's because you've got a bad heart.
I've got a bad, yeah, I'm a bad man.
So there's two other characters that we have not mentioned that we should have at this point. One of them is Callahan. Now, Callahan is the kind of the badass blonde lady. She works with Harris. She's not a baddie. She's a badass.
Yep.
She's just kind of got shades. She's had a bit of a tough life, maybe. You know, she didn't get given any special treatment on the way up, so why should she give anyone else any special treatment? She's kind of cool. All the boys fancy her. That's like a joke.
Yeah, it's a joke because the joke is woman.
Yeah.
She's a woman, I'm a man. That's hilarious.
That's a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other character is one of my personal favourites is Hooks.
I like Hooks.
It's a great name.
Good name.
Love that character name. It's strong name game. Hooks is the kind of small, squeaky-voiced lady who's very meek. Found out a nice piece of trivia. She based her voice on the one time that she met Michael Jackson. She's there. She just really wants to be a police officer. She's not bad, but she can't command the confidence.
She's like this. She's just terrified. And obviously with Harris bellowing at her, going, move it, move it, move it. Which, if you're playing at home, that is the Police Academy drinking game that every time Harris says, move it, move it, move it, you must drink.
He loves to move it, move it, move it.
He really does. And so we got all these characters thrown together. There's some others in there. Fuck it, who cares? And thus ensues a lot of, like, the film is kind of like a big elongated training montage / high school college romp.
During which this music never stops.
They are rinsing that for all it's worth. There's some other really good music in there. Like, there's some strong score in there, surprisingly, but they love that theme. Harris gets two kind of douchebaggy recruits to be his kind of whipping boys to do his business. One of the guys is the vessel for a lot of the racist gags in this film.
Just to clarify, it is because he is a racist. The gags are not directed at him.
Yeah, no, yeah. And like later on, it's kind of, at least like, the film has these like very uncomfortable racist gags. You're like, oh, I don't like that. But then you realise that the guy's car, like his car gets stolen by Gutenberger and Hightower so that Gutenberger can teach Hightower how to drive. And you go like, fuck, is that Gutenberger's car? Why does it have a Confederate flag license plate? And it's like, it was the racist guy. It all makes sense. He's racist because he's racist. Not because he's racist, because it's the 80s.
Oh my
Actually,
god, because
some
can't
of the dialogue in this is fucking, like, is like, ooh, it makes you jump out of your seat.
It's so uncomfortable. That's the thing, because you can't illustrate a character as being racist without showing them doing some racist stuff, and it is fucking full on.
Yeah, so that's why we got a few ticks on the racist gagometer.
The two kind of like Harris Stooges also get quite a few ticks on the gay gagometer.
Oh, Tom, tell me about that.
So there's this point in the film when they're having like a weekend break and Harris is like, they're going to have a party. They always have a party, these recruits. I want you to find out where the party is. And then you're going to give me a call, okay? And so Harris's two stooges, like they go and talk to this other kind of like meek character. What's his name?
Oh, Barbara.
Barbara.
Leslie Barbara.
Leslie Barbara. He's kind of a big guy. He's a bit of a pushover. And they're kind of like, we want to know where the party is. He's like, I don't know where the party is. You go ask Mahoney. And he goes and asks Mahoney. And Mahoney reads between the lines and gives them the name of a fake party destination for the two stooges to show up to, yeah? It's a bar. Was it called the Blue Oyster?
The Blue Oyster Bar.
So these two guys, they're going, okay, we found the party. And they go and walk in there. And it looks for a second like it might be full of policemen. But it's actually a leather gay bar. Because the funny thing is that they walk in and go, hang on a minute, we're not gay. This isn't the bar for us. Let's leave and let these gentlemen enjoy their evening. But obviously, the gay men won't let them leave because that's what gay men do.
Because all gay bars are like a dungeon where people bolt the door, right?
Yeah, that's how it works. Because once you go in, you can't go out. Oh, no.
Yeah, and
they keep on going back to this gag.
They love this gag, guys.
They have this gag where they're kind of like, oh, we're going to leave. And the gay guys like block the door to say, no, you're not going anywhere, straight white men. We are here to threaten you. And then they come back to the gag. And the two guys are like locked in like ballroom dancing. And because this film was written by people who have never gone anywhere near a gay bar and have any idea what goes on in there. And then they cut back to another one where they're just slow dancing and the two men like have this like 1,000-yard stare. I don't know. It's kind of funny now in a kind of like, oh, they thought that. It's funny for seeing how they thought it was funny, but it's also just really not funny.
Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. It was a weird fucking time for like mainstream comedy.
Yeah, but at the same time that this is happening, the actual party is going on a beach. And this is a right old time. There's women taking off their clothes for absolutely no reason whatsoever. We've got Tackleberry playing the saxophone just to anything.
Yeah, just like a DJ is like playing some music and Tackleberry's running around in like a Hawaiian shirt, just like riffing on a saxophone, just like like just all through the party and everybody's loving it. They're all getting down.
I just love this idea of going to a party and whatever the DJ is playing is like, I'm just going to vibe to this. That's amazing.
Just vibe out.
This is one of the reasons why I really like Tackleberry.
Yeah, he's good. And there's a kind of a funny little shot of just like, I don't even think it's meant to be a joke, but just like as the party goes on, there's this close-up shot of Tackleberry's face while he's playing the sax and he kind of stops playing the sax and he just looks fucked up. He just looks like he has no idea where he is or what is going on.
I think this is the point when like the women start taking all their clothes off and it's like Tackleberry's brain starts to melt down and you kind of like, is this the part where he murders everybody?
But he doesn't. Could so easily. That might so easily cross the line.
Yeah, that might be a deleted scene. And then I think we've got like the one other big kind of like set piece, as it were, that we should probably talk about is
Is
Lestrade's podium speech. So Harris's two goons are very upset about being sent to the Blue Oyster Bar. And they go and have a... They're going to try and get... What's his name?
Barbara.
Barbara thrown out. So the way they're going to get Barbara thrown out is by putting a prostitute in Barbara's room just as room inspections are about to come round. And the prostitute, obviously having paid for her services,
will not leave until she's fucked somebody, because that is clearly how that industry works. And then, so like, Barbara's like, Gunberger, you've got to help me. There's a prostitute in my room. I don't know what to do. She won't leave until somebody boinks her. And then, like, he's like, no, we got to leave. I'll boink you, but I can't do it in straight places. I've got to do it somewhere weird and crazy. Here, hide under this podium. At which point Lestrade is doing like a guided tour of like officials. They couldn't get enough officials to fill out the auditorium that he's giving the speech in, so that he has to actually say, sorry, there aren't enough extras here, basically. We've only got 7 of you. We wanted to have about 40. Anyway, the gag is he gets a blowy while he's trying to give a speech. That was unexpected.
That was perfect timing. Like, trombone.
We gonna leave that in?
Give it a go. Lestrade gets a beach, guys. But it's fairly unrealistic as beaches on 70-year-old men go. It's sort of the lady under the podium is like, all right, well, this is the guy. I suppose I'm going to do my thing. She unzips his fly. Lestrade has no idea. She takes a hold of his lessord. He has no idea. She pops it in her mouth, and then there's a look on his face, which is like, oh, hello, something's going on here. Does he look, doesn't look down, doesn't investigate any
further.
He just
mugs and gurns a bit.
He's the worst policeman in history. He's just like, I'm assuming this is just something that happens. That's fine. I'm not going to, not going to inquire any further.
Because it finishes and he just walks off, and then he's like halfway across the stage, and then he's kind of like, maybe I'll turn round and see who that was. That would be inquisitive of me, an inquisitive mind, a police officer, if you will. And he turns around and sees Gutenberger popping his head out from under the podium, because for some reason he was still in there hiding, awkwardly watching his boss get a fucking blowy. And so that's the bit when the scene turned around. I was like, okay, that's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. The Gutenbergler was under there. It gives him a little thumbs up. Great speech. Lestrade thinks the Gutenbergler gave him a beach. Big joke.
Big joke. Little tick on the gay gags tally.
We've missed one other of the big set pieces, which was covered slightly in the trailer. It's just a bit where the gang have to all go on some sort of exercise in town, and there's a bit of a traffic jam, and Harris the dickhead is like, enough of this, I'm commandeering this motorbike. He commandeers the motorbike, drives it too fast because he's a dickhead, drives his head straight into a horse butt.
There's no more like setup than there was in the trailer, really, was there?
No, it's just straight into a horse butt.
Yeah.
Head and horse butt.
I think that's basically what it said on the shooting script.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, basically, we need you to go from here to up that horse's bum. I mean, ad lib around it if you want, but, you know, time is money. So, like, you know, there's a lot of this stuff going on, and every now and then you kind of go like, oh, fuck, I remember that character's still in here. Like, characters drop in, drop out quite a lot.
There's too many.
So I would say, like, obviously, like, Gutenberger, like, he takes up a lot of your time. He's in there. Harris is a tour de force. Tackleberry, he's a bit of a scene stealer. Michael Winslow, his shtick doesn't really stick.
I mean, he doesn't really even have any lines.
No, he's literally there just to make funny noises. I think he's going to become like the popular one in this series, though. So we're probably going to see a lot more of him as we go on. And then basically, like, the film reaches its kind of like third act, kind of like, ooh, something's got to happen now. The stakes are got to be raised. And so we get this riot.
Spackler throws an apple.
Right, yeah. So Spackler's out on patrol. He's like the clumsy one. He's in this car with like a regular cop, and he's like, hey, I got you an apple. Spackler goes, apples, go fuck yourself. Throws it out the window. A, who does that? Who gets given a perfectly uneaten apple and just throws it out the window? Hits some guy in the back of the head who's like a local tough. He turns around and sees another local tough who is eating an apple. So he's like, this guy, he's obviously an apple guy.
Yeah, he was obviously Johnny Two Apples. He bought two apples.
It's how I always roll. I buy one to eat, one to throw at fucks I don't like. And then, and so he just like punches him in the face, and it sets off a domino effect of everyone having a fight with each other, to the point that the town erupts into a riot and they have to send the police academy in to assist.
Is it even remotely addressed why they send in the police academy and not the police?
No, they send in the police, but the police academy are meant to be sent to the perimeter of the riot where they're not going to be engaging with anybody, even though they've been given live ammo that you can't use at Tackleberry. They've been sent to like the outskirts, but they get given the wrong directions by Lestrade. And
Lestrade is from Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, okay. Anyway, he gives them the wrong directions and they go right into the middle of the riot, and so they get caught up in all the business. At which point the film suddenly introduces the main villain of the piece, who's in it for about 5 minutes, who I want to call Sexy Grandpa.
Oh my God, Sexy Grandpa. He's like Willie Nelson went bad.
Yeah. It's like this kind of like angry hobo who steals guns from Harris's stooges.
He takes their guns from them and they run off in fear, take shelter in, mwah, mwah, the Blue Oyster Bar again.
That's another tick on the gay gags little tally there. There we go. That's there nice. That makes it six. Sexy Grandpa takes Harris hostage. Kim Cattrall and Gutenberg. Hey, Kim Cattrall's in this film. She'd been disappeared for about 50 minutes, and then she's suddenly back as like one of the main heroes of the piece. It's up to the two of them to kind of save the day, and they kind of do. Like this is the point where like the soundtrack is working super hard here. The soundtrack in this bit of the film is fucking great.
Oh yeah.
Not a lot of gags in it.
Not in this end section, but yeah, the soundtrack is bringing all the tension. The characters, as thinly developed as they are, they're working as hard as they can, and we get the smallest, tiniest little character arc that has ever been in a movie. Because the scene before this, Hightower, who we all love, that gentle giant of a florist, he got the sack because
he stood up for
Hooks because
a racist cop being racist.
Racist cop said an awful racist slur about Hooks, and Hightower won't go and stand for it. He was just like, no, I've had enough, you're a dickhead. And he goes to go tell him that he's a dickhead, and he gets sacked for that. And so he goes back to being a florist. And then in the middle of this riot, Hightower realizes that his friends are trapped on a roof with Sexy Grandpa Willie Nelson. And he just like walks up there as a civilian and saves the day.
Yeah.
And gets reinstated.
Yeah,
gets as a result of his heroism. Also, for some reason, Gutenberg, the Gutenbergler, the Googlyberg, the Goo Goo Bird, he gets
the Goo Goo Dolls.
The Goo Goo Doll. He gets a medal as well.
Well, he was also instrumental in saving Harris from Sexy Grandpa. And so they both get recognized at the big graduation. And so this is like the triumphant moment. Like, oh, Hooks speaks in a loud voice.
Yeah, she goes, don't move, dirtbag, to Sexy Grandpa.
That's her whole story arc. And yeah, they have the big graduation. Everyone's looking very proud. Everyone's really happy for themselves. Hightower delivers his kind of like, they get, Hightower and Gutenberg get given medals. Hightower just says, thanks. Gutenberg gives like a very douchey Ferris Bueller-y speech that goes nowhere and doesn't really get any laughs. And he stood there at the podium, zip, barrels the camera as if to say, oh, am I getting a blowy right now?
You better believe he's getting a beach, baby!
Roll credits!
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bam.
Fuck. It had its ups and its downs.
Now, I did enjoy it because I would be lying if I said that you and me did not laugh our asses off at certain points of that movie. We weren't necessarily laughing at the things that the filmmakers wanted us to.
Yeah, there were some laughs, though. There was another just like a simple laugh where Harris's two stooges just wanted to throw Barbara's books out the window. And one of them just walks over to the window and just throws them. And the window is closed, so they just bounce back. And I was just like, I don't know, man.
It's a really simple
character. There was something about watching comedy with another person. Like, if I watched that on my own, I would not laugh. But just because you were in the room with me, I was just like, you know what? Fuck it, that's funny. But then there were bits of, there's stuff that doesn't land. There's bits that we were calling up, like, I see that joke, I get it, I see what they're doing. It's not a tickler.
Well, yeah, sometimes you can just see a joke and you can go, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. That's the reaction it gets from you. But it doesn't actually make you laugh. But, yeah. Like, you get the mechanics. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
So there's, the bit where...
that is, you know...
where Barbara, the sort of one of the clumsier cops, they're sort of on the rifle range and he's like walking out to go fire off his gun, and the gun accidentally goes off in his hand and shoots out a window, and he turns around to be like, what did I do? And then everybody ducks because they don't want him to accidentally shoot them as well. It's a joke. It works as a joke.
You see it and he's like,
you see it, yeah, and you're like, yeah, that's funny. I'm not going to laugh because I'm not psychopathic. But yes, I get it.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you have a standout laugh?
Do I have a standout laugh? Not one that we haven't covered. My standout laugh was throwing the books in the window, I think.
Yeah, I think mine was like the slow build of the wife on the bonnet of the car. Because it just kind of like, it's like, that's not funny. And then it's like, okay, that's the middle point. It's like, okay, that's kind of funny. And then just, yeah.
I did spot a poignant moment. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Todd's moment of tenderness, but it's not. It's more poignant. And it's just a bit early on where the Goo-Goo Bird is trying to go get sacked. He goes to see Lassard in his office, and he's sort of saying, oh, like, you've got to fire me, you've got to fire me. And Lassard he's a nice guy. He's just like, I'm sorry, I can't. Like, we're not allowed to fire you. Like, we've got strict instructions not to. And he goes, well, I quit. And Lassard also goes, I'm sorry, no, you can't quit. Like, these are the rules that we've got, you can't. And the Goo Goo Monster goes, oh, what, so I'm trapped? And Lassard looks at him and with a totally straight face, but with really kind eyes, goes, yeah, of course you're trapped. We all are. And I'm just like, oh, he's like really...
like life, yeah?
Well, but he's also, he's really old and he's really nice and he's working at the academy, and it's like, oh, is this how he planned his life to turn out?
Probably
did
wasn't,
he want to be
it?
A proper, like a, did he want to be a hero cop? Or did he end up...
he wanted more, didn't he?
I want to find out more about Lassard. But he's nicer, he's not bitter.
Yeah.
But he's trapped,
apparently. There are some other odd threads in here, like Barbara, at the beginning of the film, gets harassed by... he's working in a Kodak store, which is shaped like a Kodak camera. Nice bit of product placement for Kodak. Kodak sponsoring the Bitter End podcast. Always use Kodak.
I don't know if you could even if you try anymore.
Yeah. Please, for the love of God, try Kodak. And this gang, the weirdest crime I've ever seen, like just like come up and they're like, hey, how's it going, Barbara, in your fucking little Kodak shed? We're going to put your Kodak shed on the back of a flatbed lorry, and we're going to drive it out to a bridge, and we're going to throw it off. They steal a building. They steal a building and throw it into the river.
Those are some ambitious gangsters.
Solely to fuck with Barbara. I want to know more about the Kodak gang.
Well, we run into them later. While during the riot, they're taking furniture out of a building, and Barbara's there, and he has his kind of like, no, this is my moment, yeah. You know, and he
kicks the shit out of him.
And he's like, I want you to put that furniture back in that building. And they're like, but it's our furniture. So they weren't even committing a crime. Barbara committed the crime.
Yeah, they were just moving the furniture out of their house in the middle of a riot.
Well, that's bad timing.
Yeah, it's just bad timing. You can't really... When you got to move, you got to move. If you got that van booked, you know what I mean? You got to get it out. So I'm going to just... I want to pin a little medal on somebody here. With each film, I think it's just worth... Like, it's a big ensemble cast, man. And I think we need to really acknowledge, like, who we think steals the show. Like, who is the real key player? Who is...
I want to know.
Yeah. So my sort of like medal of honor that I want to give, I think for this film, it's not Gutenberger, even though he is the star. Could have been Harris. He does like to move it. But it's got to be Tackleberry. Tackleberry.
Tackleberry.
He, in this film, he might not be for every film, but he just steals every scene he's in this. He embodies... the psychopathic, gun-toting American white man perfectly. And I could not get enough. So well done, sir.
Well done. You look forward to charting your career throughout the remaining six of these movies.
Yeah, so six movies. The next one, Police Academy 2. Who'd have thought it? Is it Police Academy 2, their first assignment?
First assignment. So I'm going to assume that means that they're...
not in the academy.
They're full-on officers. They're on the streets. They're solving actual crimes.
They could have just called it police.
I suppose they could. Tom, that's a good note. That's one that we could have used like a good 30 years ago. Okay. Little too late, buddy. Okay. Yes, so I'm interested to see it. Now, part of the nature of this franchise, at least for me, is I have literally no idea what films I've seen and what I haven't.
Mm.
I think I've not seen this one, but maybe I have.
Who knows? I mean...
I've definitely seen more of these characters than just in this first film.
Yeah, and I know that like these aren't the only characters you're going to see. Like Bobcat Goldthwait's going to show up as like the guy with the crazy voice.
Well, he's the villain, and I think he's the villain
no,
in the next
one. No, he's a cop.
No, he starts as a villain. He's a gang member. I think this is in this one we're going to get him as a
spoilers,
gang member.
Bruh. Okay, right.
I might be wrong.
Okay, I'm just looking forward to his crazy voice. But there's more things to come from this franchise. So, you know, won't you join us next time to see what unfolds on their first assignment?
So, until then, you can find us on Twitter at BitterEndPod or on Facebook at BitterEndPod. If you get in touch, we will always reply. I don't think we've missed a message yet, and we love hearing from you.
Oh, we do.
Make sure that you tell your friends all about The Bitter End. Like, and there's still plenty of time for them to get on board and join us for this franchise. And don't forget that all of our previous five franchises are all still on the stream, and you can go back and enjoy them at your leisure.
Binge that shit and go and tell your mate Gary, who's just really just awkwardly into Police Academy, tell him his ship has come in.
Gary, mate,
you're never gonna guess what these two dickheads are doing.
It's paying off. It's your big chance, Gary. Until then,
move it.